to the official podcast for St. Philip's Episcopal Church in Rochester, Michigan. You can learn more about our church at our website, stpfeeds.org. Our Sunday services are at 8 and 10 a.m., and all are welcome. This podcast is the sermon for Sunday, June 25th, 2023, by Eric Williams.
Over the years, the single most frequent issue that people have brought to me in counseling has been the issue of troubled or broken family relationships. And I can relate. In my extended family, there's a whole tradition of people not speaking to each other for years and not even sometimes remembering why. Like, what was the original problem? They just know that they're angry with so-and-so. My mother and her sister over, I won't go into the details, but it was a long, bitter separation between two people who grew up together. We have that in my dad's side of the family as well. My one aunt was always mad at the rest of the family for something, would not come to events. It was a thing. And I know that it's true in many of your lives as well. Family relationships. You know, I grew up in the days of Ozzie and Harriet, right? It was reruns, but still. And Leave It to Beaver. You know, these idealized families on TV. And then you'd look at your own family and go, how come we're not like that? How come our family is full of tension? How come there's disagreements? How come there's conflict? And then you realize that conflict and family conflict have been part of human history from the very beginning. In fact, all of the great dramas revolve in some way around dysfunctional families. All the way back, Homer, the Greek tragedies, the Greek comedies, all the way up through Shakespeare. How many of Shakespeare's plays are really about that issue of conflict within families and so forth? All the way up to modern dramas like Succession, maybe, you know, a popular show today, is all about family conflict, and particularly around the issue of inheritance and money. Financial planners will tell you that that is the single biggest source of pain and conflict, is how money is going to get divided, right? Especially when a family is complicated with stepchildren and who's going to get what, and people have expectations, and it causes strife. Well, it's helpful to know that this occurs also in the Bible, isn't it? That the Bible gives us families for whom these same issues are very real. Last week, when we met Abraham, he had just met God. The three strangers came and they blessed Abraham and Sarah and they said, you're going to have a son. And they left and everything was great, right? And in fact, we got the end of the story last week that Isaac was born, the promise was fulfilled, hunky-dory. Well, this week, we're kind of in between. The promise has been made, but guess what? It doesn't happen right away. Abraham and Sarah, remember, are already 75. Sarah's already past menopause. This is going to be a miracle, and they're ready, like, right now. We don't have time to waste, right? The clock is ticking. I know some of you tell me that. I don't want to waste a minute of my life because the time is getting short. There's not as much life left, right? So they're thinking, we got to get this done now. And then they wait. They wait days. They wait months. They wait years. They're thinking, we don't have that many years, God. When is this going to happen? They wait decades, 25 years from when God promises Isaac to when Isaac is born. And along the way, you got to think they had some moments of doubt, right? As full of faith, Abraham is the hero of faith. But there were some doubts. In fact, Sarah decides that they need to take things into their own hands, and she tells Abraham, I want you to go to Hagar, my slave woman, and get her pregnant so you can have a son. Otherwise, you're not going to have a son. She basically gives up on God's promise and says, we gotta make this happen. And so Hagar immediately gets pregnant, and then Sarah realizes that she didn't want that after all at all. This is not a good thing because Hagar is now looking down on Sarah. The slave woman is looking down on the mistress because she's pregnant and Sarah is not. And Sarah is furious. And so she treats Hagar terribly. She abuses her. And in fact, Hagar runs away. But God says, "Don't worry, Hagar, I'm with you. Your son will be blessed." Well, today we pick up the story. Isaac has finally been born. The 25 years have passed. Isaac is here. He's been weaned. We're having a big party. And Sarah looks over and she sees Ishmael and Isaac playing together. And she says to herself, "Uh-oh, who's going to inherit?" Right? It's just like succession. Who's going to get the goods? Who's going to get Abraham's name? Who's going to get the blessing? Who's going to get the property? And she decides that Hagar and Ishmael have got to go. They served their purpose. They were placeholders just in case, but now they are disposable. They can be thrown out like the garbage. And I love Abraham in this story. He's like, "Well, I don't know. I kind of like him. I want my son." You know, he has no spine in this story, I got to say. He lets this happen. God says, "Don't worry, Abraham, I got you." And Sarah gets her way, and Ishmael and Sarah are thrown out with just one skin of water. And when that runs out, they're going to die. So family conflict is real. Maybe not as extreme as that, but some of you have told me stories that are pretty bitter about hurts that go very deep, because the people closest to us can often hurt us the most deeply. We have all these expectations, all these hopes, all these desires, and then things fall apart. Perhaps a child is estranged from us. Perhaps they marry someone who never gets along, and there's just this terrible weight and heartache. Well, let's fast forward to Jesus and his disciples. Jesus is continuing to equip and train his disciples for their ministry. He's giving them their marching orders, and today he's got some hard words for them. "If you're going to follow me," he says, "life is going to be difficult." Not "it might be," it's going to be difficult. You are going to encounter conflict. You're going to have conflict with the rulers and powers of this world. You're going to have conflict with the religious authorities. And you're going to have conflict with your own family. Families are going to be divided over your decision to follow me. Be prepared for conflict. Now, I got to say, this is not a happy subject for most of us in church. Most of us, in my experience in church, would be very happy to avoid conflict forever, right? Raise your hand if you've ever tried to avoid conflict and stay away from it, run away. So what often happens in church, and I'll check with Bishop Kimo and Father John, what often happens in church is there's some conflict going on, you know, sometimes, and not here, but some churches have conflict. And what happens? People run away. They disappear because it's too difficult, right? I want to suggest that our scriptures today invite us to take a different look at conflict. Not to be conflict avoidant, which is my natural state, run away, hide, wait till it blows over, make peace, do whatever. But that's a mistake, because conflict is inevitable. Wherever two or three are gathered together, there is Jesus and there is conflict. Because you and I don't see things the same way. We don't have the same life experience. We don't have the same values necessarily. We don't have the same opinions. We don't have the same politics. So we're going to be in conflict. The question is, how will we manage that conflict? Can we do that in a way that preserves relationship and builds community? Or must we be doomed to throwing each other out into the wilderness to die, right? Do we have to go that route, or is there another way? There have been some wonderful books written about this. In my training, family systems theory, Murray Bowen, who was a psychologist who worked with families, his work got picked up by Rabbi Edwin Friedman, who talked about how this works in congregational life, and they offered some very helpful thoughts about how you and I can handle conflict in a different way, in a better way. And it really involves working on ourselves. It's about spiritual growth and maturity. Can we have the kind of deep roots where we don't feel terribly threatened when somebody disagrees with us? If I say, the sky is green, and you say, you're an idiot, the sky is blue, do I have to feel personally attacked? Or can we have a conversation where you can be you and I can be me? And I can respect you and you can respect me. That only happens when we have the kind of groundedness and rootedness that allows us to enter into disagreements with calmness and integrity. Being free to speak the truth in love. Jesus said, speak the truth and speak it in love. Be honest about where you are, what you believe, what you think. You don't have to hide that or trade it away. So often we cave in so quickly because we want to keep peace. But you know what? That's not real, because in our hearts and our stomachs, we are still seething, right? You know when you leave that. You've made peace. You let whoever it was win. But you go home and your stomach is in a knot. You ever felt that way? It's horrible. Instead, what if we were able to speak to one another in honesty, with love, saying, no, I just want you to know this is where I'm coming from. And then have the grace to listen deeply to the other person, to use the gifts of empathy and patience and love to really try to get into the other person's shoes, to try the best we're able with our imagination and by the grace of God to experience life from another's point of view, to walk in their moccasins, right? That old saying. When we do that, we have a moment, hopefully, of grace and opportunity. There's maybe a whole list of things that we disagree about, but then you know what we find? We find there's some common ground, that maybe at the heart we really do have the same values and desires, the same hopes for our family or for our church or for the world. We seek the same things. We're just looking at it from such different perspectives. Where there is that grace to build common ground and community, something magical happens. Out of an enemy, we find that perhaps we have a friend, or at least an ally, someone with whom we can maintain relationship. It was Jesus' fervent desire that his disciples be one in the unity that God has in the Trinity, in the unity that God has with Jesus the Son, in the unity that he yearns for the Spirit to bring about. But that unity always comes with disagreement and conflict. I believe that the story that we're hearing in Genesis is a wonderful story of progress. Remember, conflict went all the way back to Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, the first family. There was murder, right? So it started pretty bad. But then through the story of Abraham and Abraham's sons and grandsons and their family, something begins to emerge, and that is the possibility for forgiveness, for reconciliation, for deeper community and relationship. That's what God desires for you and for me. God desires that we be fully ourselves, speaking the truth with integrity and love, and also willing to participate in a community that is diverse, that has disagreements, and yet is committed to the love and meaning of God. Jesus said the way to do this, well, I should say St. Paul said the way to do this, is we have to die to ourselves in order to experience the new life of resurrection. We have to let go of our pride, ego, stubbornness, need to be right, you know, all that stuff. We gotta let that go. We gotta hang that on Jesus' cross and allow the new life of resurrection to take hold. A new life where we can be friends and brothers and sisters with people who are different from us, who share a different background, a different race, a different gender, a different sexual orientation, a different politics, a different, you name it. and we can have a community that God's Spirit is powerfully present in and with and through. My friends, I think this is holy work of striving to be ourselves, to be rooted and grounded in Christ, and to be allowing others to be fully themselves, to see in them the image of God, to see in them the Spirit of God working, to see in an enemy a friend, and to know that in the end, there is no us and them. In God's Spirit, there is only us. Amen.